You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live to the cosmos from the backyard at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Well, hello, everybody. Hello. Jack, am I have a sound check on this?
You're good.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. This is Brian DeMarco, and I'm your host of Unfiltered Radio here. And I'm sad that Miss Erin Fitzpatrick is not with us or among us today. I think she's on a flight from L.A., and she desperately wanted to be here. But we do have some great guests in the audience and in the studio today. I do have some good information about the first week in spring right now. We're in this first week of spring, and it's like April Fools, and this is our 104th show. So this is kudos for that. We've actually made it to 104 shows, and in the studio today we have Miss Katarina from Code Brand. Say hello.
Hello.
So we're honored to that we are a media outlet that you choose to come back to not once, not twice, maybe even three times. And who have you brought with us today?
I brought the fabulous Lorenzo Bakewell Stone of the Flaggate Partnership. Wow. And they represent Taylor Flaggate, Fonseca, and Croft Ports.
Usually the guys with like two last names are so self-important. So let me ask you, Lorenzo, are you an important guy?
I'll try
and
live up to that.
Are you an important guy in the wine business?
I work for a very important company in the wine business.
So tell me about a venerable company like, you know, Taylor Flaggate, you know, you've been on an acquisition tear. You're picking up, you have more brands you know what to do with. How do you keep everyone happy?
Well, we have three very prestigious brands, and I think that by sticking to those three, then we don't lose sight of the quality. So maintaining the quality is how we keep ourselves happy and how we keep our customers happy.
So God forbid if I'm the fourth brand in your portfolio.
Come on board.
You don't pay attention to me.
But all the brands have such different personalities too. So I think that's something that they play around a lot with. For example.
Explain.
Yeah. Are you 300 years old, Brian?
Well, mentally, I've been told.
You seem very wise.
I've been told that I have 300-year-old ideas.
Right.
Wow.
Well, let's try and renovate today.
Well, let me ask you, how do you, I mean, I know the Fonseca family personally from travels through Portugal and met some of the misfit cousins and some of the, there's some good folks in that group.
The Guimarães.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And to me, like, Croft is the one I least understand.
Yeah.
But one of my most exciting, and it's hard to say exciting and port usually in the same sentence, but I'm about to tell you. Mm-hmm. One of my most exciting opportunities for drinking was the 1966 Croft, which you know I've talked about before on this show,
right,
as just a standout. It's my birth year also.
Oh.
It's a standout for me.
You don't look a day older.
You're a good man. So tell me how Croft.
Well, Croft has a fabulous reputation for that that era. So the 1945, the 63, the 66. These are iconic vintage ports. And in the latter part of the 20th century, Croft got bought up by Diageo and became a bit more focused on the commercial end. And when we took it on in 2001, our objective was to return it to those former years of glory.
This is kind of what I've noticed, because there was a run of like the Rubies and the Tawnies, like the younger, you know, one would say more accessible wines at retail. And Croft was, you know, one of the people that were kind of on the forefront of that. And the Fonseca people, obviously, they've had, you know, they've been 27 and some things that have been very consumer friendly. When I say that, not that the port isn't, but I think people perceive port much in the same way that neophytes perceive champagne. It's you know, specific to an occasion. It has a specific day part. It has even seasonality. But before we get into this whole craziness about this, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you become involved with the likes of this company? And are you related
through Portugal? I'm not. Not yet. Not yet. I went to Portugal straight after university about 5 years ago, and I spent a year in Lisbon. And during that year, I went up to Porto and visited the sellers and took a look around and thought that was where I wanted to be. So it all sort of developed from a first-hand experience of the culture and the
place. So you started as an intern or as
I start I did the vintage as as a sort of hazing.
Of course, you have to.
And I was put through my paces during the night shift for 30 days running and beaten up by David Guimarães and passed the test and started working actually for Adrian on the hotel that we built. So I was project managing for the hotel interior design side. And then moved into the wines after we opened.
So give me, you know, the PG-13. Actually, we're on satellite radio. You can almost give me the R-rated version.
Right.
But give me the corporate checklist version of hazing at the winery. What is involved with something like that?
There's a little bit of wine wastage involved in spraying quite strong jets of wine against people.
Oh my God!
There was a little.
Kateri is horrified. Look at her. She's like, I knew Brian would get this out of him.
There was a little bucket on top of a door, which was filled with grape skins, which landed on my head, which was quite painful. But I got through it.
The grape skins or the bucket hitting you in the head?
Yeah, the bucket. I think was the painful bit. But it's the last night is sort of a bit of a ritual of the harvest, big party, lots of
so Bacchus comes out.
Yeah, you drink some very low grade quality wines and being surrounded by the best stuff around. But the vintage is amazing. It's a very
so it's fair to say there's there's some male bonding, usually some nudity, and some other.
There are some little old ladies who
nude.
I
thankfully haven't experienced any of them nude, but they are free with their hands in the lagars
when
we're foot treading. They sometimes.
They cop a feel.
They cop a feel. Yeah, they have been known. They have been known to reach out.
I like how it's the other way around, though. Usually, you know, it's those dirty old men.
Yeah, no. It's the tides turn in the lagars.
That's lovely.
Right. Well, you know, that's why there's all these handsome interns. You know, that they hire. They've got to feed the beast.
Keep those grannies happy.
Well, before we take a break, we're gonna tell me what we've got on the table. And then when we get back, we're going to taste some cocktails and we're talk about port and how we look at it in a modern sort of pitch.
Great.
So what do we have on the table?
Okay, we have four different ports that we're tasting today in cocktails. The first is the Sirocco dry white from Fonseca, which is exactly that. It's a very fresh, crisp white port.
Mm-hmm.
We have the first rosé port to be introduced to the market,
nice.
Which is Croft Pink. So this is a whole new style of port developed by David Guimarães and Adrian Bridge a few years back. And we are doing a lot with cocktails with this product. It makes fantastic sangrias.
Mm.
Very, very light and fruity without the big body of the red ports.
Mm-hmm. And then
we have the Fonseca Bin 27, which is a reserve, the real driver for the market for all ports in the US, and Taylor's 10-year-old Tawny.
Oh, nice.
Which is a famous and well-known.
Well, that's great, and I can't wait. So let's take a quick break, Jack, and when we get back, we're going to do some cocktails with these great ports, and we'll see you when we're right back here on Unfiltered. Take care.
We are
Well, welcome back to the 104th episode of Unfiltered. We're here at Roberta's Live. It's a beautiful, beautiful April 2nd or 3rd. I don't even know. Anyway,
it's the 3rd.
It's the 3rd.
Yeah.
It's sort of April Fool's show, and it's a great, great day. And we've got some good guests in the audience. Of course, the lovely and talented Katerina.
Oh, how nice.
From Cobrand.
I thought that Lorenzo was coming.
And that, yes, and Lorenzo with two last names. So he's super important in the wine and port business. And Mr. Stone. Mr.
Stone. Bakewell Stone.
Bakewell Stone.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Stone, I think you have some news for me about Mr. Bond.
I read recently, yes, that he was turning over to a different type of drink on the next Bond film.
No, so what? No more shaken, more shaken, not stirred.
Yes, I've heard that he's going to be downing some Heineken.
Wow!
Oh, those American filmmakers.
Yeah.
What do you think the product placement tab for that is?
That's got to be pretty expensive. Yeah, I think we approached them with the Bin 27, but
you did,
yeah.
The Bin 27 martini,
yeah,
right.
That's right. Which we're going to be tasting in a little bit.
So while we're talking about James Bond, I want to, Katerina, can you please start mixing some cocktails for us? Because it is
all right.
Let's start with the white port, please.
Okay,
and then let's get back. What do you think the first, you know, obnoxious product, will it be in the dashboard? Oh, shake that again. Would it be in the dashboard of the Aston Martin, and when he goes to get his gun, there'll be like a cooler full of Heineken in the glove box?
Be one of those flip caps you don't need an opener for.
Or will it be basically the hood of the car, like a NASCAR? We'll have a Heineken logo on the Aston Martin. You know,
sad day in James Bond.
Yeah, I see.
So he's just going to be carrying around a big mug of Heineken,
a flagon of Heineken. Yeah,
exactly.
So our first drink, Katerina, tell me what we've got here.
Well, first I want to start with port cocktails as a category. So everyone thinks it's kind of new. You know, they're like, "Whoa, I've never heard of port cocktails before. What are you talking about?" And when you look at history, though, it's actually not new at all. We're actually trying to bring it back. So about 300 years ago, sailors in the maritime British era would drink punches made out of port and rum on the ships, with a little bit of nutmeg, fresh nutmeg grated over the top. And
is this story where people get naked and there's grape skins or something?
Exactly.
And all women
feel? More of that.
Okay. So tell me, continue, I'm sorry.
So in sangria, you know, it's so popular today. That is, the precursor to that was the sangaree, which was ruby port, nutmeg, and citrus. So port and cocktails has been around forever. So we're just trying to remind people, all.
Where can one intrepid listener find the cocktail list for your company?
Ooh, they can go to portcocktails.com, and we actually have a full list of different type of cocktails that they can mess around with.
I happen to find this little hand.
We have a lovely little booklet. Yeah. So you can learn all about it.
This is well shot.
Written on 200-year-old scroll paper, parchment.
Antique font.
This is nice. So are we drinking the Sirocco and tonic?
Yes.
Huh. So it's first introduced in the 50s then.
The 30s. White port dates back to dry white port particularly dates back to the 30s, invented by the tailors' owners at the time, the Yateman family. And this cocktail became very popular through the 50s and Portugal. It's what we drink in the summers on our terraces looking out over the Douro Valley with a little plate of roasted almonds, crushed up mint, ice, white port, Sirocco, white port, and tonic water. That's what you need.
It feels very like, you know, pre-Mad Men, but like right where it belongs. Like, you know, before we just drank cold gin straight from the, you know, from the tap. Now, this seems like so, you know.
It's a gin and tonic without the headache.
It's funny because it's just like everything diet, or like, you know, people think, oh, well, it's diet, so I can eat the whole bag.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but no, this is a very refreshing drink, and I'm quite intrigued by it because you talk about basil and mint and lemon wheel. I mean, you're basically talking about like the caipirinhas of the world and the mojitos of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, how did the Brazilians beat you to this punch? When you've invented the punch.
I guess, yeah, I guess it went from Portugal to Brazil, right? Maybe it wound up on the other side of the Atlantic.
Well, the best part of Portugal is Brazil.
No comment. No comment. I do love Brazil. But so, well, Sirocco means a dry wind. And it's a sailing term. It's a term for the winds that took the sailors home from the north of Africa. So maybe the same wind blew the port punches over to Brazil.
I feel like this
so
is
so deep.
It's very Spinal Tap. This song is the dry wind. So maybe this is Katarina. This is exactly what you were saying, is how something old is now something new again. So this went down to Brazil. It got rejiggered, and now it's back to Portugal as something sort of, you know, rediscovered.
Well, it's back in Brooklyn.
We're launching this in the heart of Hipsterville. We're in Hipsterville.
Retro, right?
Yeah, we're so retro. We're post-retro over here.
But I do want to point out, we have another lovely white cocktail. It's called the Maria McClare. It was created by David Wondrich, who's also a local Brooklynite.
We know him well.
Definitely. And it's got Campari in there, the Fonseca Sirocco, some bitters, and some Irish whiskey. Hence the name Maria McClare.
Wow, so it is a his answer to what we would call say it.
I don't know.
You know, come on, say it.
I don't know.
All right. Well, I don't know. It's a port Negroni, right?
Oh, you think so?
I think so.
But with whiskey?
Well, yeah, I mean,
I guess so.
Why not? It would be bourbon, yeah, Negroni, or gin.
Yeah, yeah. It actually is. It looks like a Negroni. That's for sure. Same coloring.
Let's get a taste of that.
Ching ching.
Cling cling.
Okay, Lorenzo, give me your opinion, because I've got that bitters and that little orange. What do you think? Ooh.
Yes, very, very, very refreshing. It does have that Negroni.
Yeah.
Finish.
Mm-hmm.
But the orange is lovely, isn't it?
It's nice. It's refreshing.
Blossom.
But it has more weight to it than the white. This is still a white port, though.
Yep.
Still the white port in there, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Katarina, what do you think? What do you prefer so far?
I love white port by itself, to be honest.
On the rocks.
On the rocks, yeah, with a twist of basil or something like that. I find it
so
really
so it reminds
refreshing.
Me, but it doesn't have the sweetness of, say, like a Martini Bianco, which is like in Europe, it would be a classic aperitif, 5 o'clock.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Similar, but not.
So tell me about the day parts for these drinks. And do you feel like there's different day parts for white port versus red port? It doesn't matter.
Day parts meaning when and
where.
Yeah,
the occasion.
Yeah. White port traditionally is an aperitif. It's afternoon in the sun. It's obviously served chilled on its own. And then in these cocktails, they're very much summery cocktails as well. So it's versus the more traditional ruby port, which you might have after the meal with a dessert. It's there are certain customs,
right.
But you know, we always say just experiment, and there are no rules to be broken.
Right. Considering that there's a bit more alcohol in these, chilling them and diluting them with a little ice kind of makes it the same proof as a traditional cocktail, but you're still having that more in depth. It's got more character to it than say a straight vodka, which is like the vodka is a palate by which you would add flavor.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they're luxury cocktails.
Right.
These are luxury products. There's a lot of time and attention that goes into making top quality ports, and the cocktail world at the moment is. Demands top quality ingredients.
So how have you, what I mean, besides the, you know, portcocktail.com, which everyone's going to download and check out, this book is amazing, by the way, there's some really cool ideas here. What type of mixologists have you tapped into to help you not only experiment, but to really hone your voice and like what you believe is the right kind of cocktail for the brand?
We've had cocktails developed by Guy Regan, by David Wondrich, by Jim Meehan,
and also the Lupek ladies. Do you know about the Lupek ladies? Ladies Under the Preservation of Endangered Cocktails. It's a chapter organization around the country, and they're fabulous. We just did an event with them yesterday, but really cool working mixologists, ladies. in the biz that are just super creative, great palate, you know, very nicely balanced cocktails.
I was telling a room full of 25 young lady mixologists yesterday in
a
hotel.
Oh God!
About port.
And you were
port
hazed cocktails. Again.
I was. Is my the hazing just gets better and better.
So, what was your key message?
What was my key message? I think my key message was, "Here I am, ladies." First day in New York.
Here he is.
So are you married?
I'm not married, no.
Oh, Katarina, be careful with this one.
Yes, I know. I know.
So. We have time, so let's get into the reds and tell me what we got going on here.
Okay, well, we also have Bubbles in Pink, which is a nice celebratory cocktail with craft pink and Prosecco and Cointreau and a dash of bitters.
Oh,
this is the one I stole and took
brunch.
For myself.
I know, but it's quite delicious, I think.
Think Sunday brunch.
You know, it's interesting. When I first tasted this, Lorenzo, I believe there was a bit too much orange associated with it. But now that I've had the others... It has mellowed out, but I think my taste buds are...
And the pink's coming through on
right.
that.
Right, it is. It is indeed. Mm.
It's a it's a fantastic success, this cocktail.
So this is, you know, I have to talk a little bit here about the pink because, you know, the first wines that for my company ever imported in 2005 was, you know, rosé from Provence. Mm. And my affinity for rosé is almost borderline on snobbish, but... It is that I prefer it in a, you know, the salmon colored and completely dry and vinified like a white wine, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of fancy myself as a bit of a rosé, you know, aficionado.
So how does it rate?
Well, it's mixed. So is it possible to have
we've got some cups. Let's taste it neat.
Oh, well, that's right. Katarina has her plastic cups and we'll travel.
Pink, just to recap
tell me how
it's made.
Tell me how it's made.
While Katarina throws cups around the studio, the wine comes from the same grape varieties as the traditional red ports. Your Bin 27 grape varieties will be going into the pink as well. But we just give it less time on the skin. So whereas we spend 48 hours trudging through the grapes, trotting on the grapes for the Bin 27, and fermenting in contact with the skins on the craft pink, we just leave it there for a couple of hours and then take off the juice, give it a cold press and a 7-day chilled fermentation as well. So it's a lot lighter. It doesn't have the tannins that you get on the
it's quite
the Bin
nice.
27.
It's kind of like sangria in a bottle.
I think if you just poured this on the rocks, it'd be pretty
absolutely
fantastic
on the rocks.
Yeah, with a
squeeze a lemon.
Well, a lemon, you know, zest.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with a bit of zest.
No pith, just zest.
But David Gimmerines generally favors. Grapes that are slightly higher, higher altitudes, slightly lower Beaumets. It's trying to get a bit of acidity into the wine to balance out the sugars that you get. It is a sweet wine,
and also I think it's in line with the characteristic of a rosé and what people expect from it. But so who do you think the customer is for this? Do you think it's straight towards women or? You
know. Not necessarily. I've done a lot of tastings in restaurants, doing happy hours, doing straight up trade fairs. Guys love it as well.
Everyone loves it, really. When
anyone who tastes pink loves it.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's certainly a younger.
So open ended. Let's move on.
All right, we have a lovely Manhattan that is made with Bin 27, some maple syrup, and bourbon.
Coming over.
All right.
So you know that drink is so popular right now.
So maple give it a nice, syrup. It's like, is it? And this is organic Vermont maple syrup. Or
I think it was like whiskey barrel
this
maple
is aged,
syrup or something.
This is bourbon aged maple syrup from here from Roberta's.
Holy crap! Wow.
So that's
this is like black maple bourbon. This is that get that first.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
With a dash syrup. Of that's really lovely. A dash of Angostura as well.
You wouldn't put that on the rocks.
Serve that in a cocktail glass.
Yeah.
Chill it out.
It would be delicious.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, with a brandy cherry at the bottom.
That is. That's quite Moorish. Actually.
It is. Mm. That's really nice. Okay. Well, you tickled my fancy with that one.
But it gets even fancier. So
do tell.
Well, it gets even more imperial, and a lot of people have referred to Taylor's as the imperial port,
right?
The patrician.
Why is port. That? Because it's the most
king of ports.
It's certainly the longevity of the history of the family and the renown of the vintages, the year on year out, coming out with the finest and most well received vintages over the last 100 and so years.
I think there's about 3 or 4 houses that have been always neck and neck with having some pretty quality juice, and I think Taylor's have consistency, and I think that, you know, when the good vintages, when everyone said, okay, 63, 66, 70, 77, you know, 90, 94, Taylor's, everyone tried to make good port in those years. And Taylor made good port in those years and a lot of other years too.
Yeah. Without fail.
Right. And so I think that, you know, going back to look at the Dalles and the Wares, I mean, they do a good job. And obviously in the key years, you know, everyone's doing, you know, it's like 2000 Bordeaux. Like, if you screwed up in 2000, then you really shouldn't be in the business. Mm-hmm. And now 2009 is kind of the same way. You know, from Burgundy through Bordeaux and even in California, there's, you know, just top, you know, producers have made great wines.
Yeah.
So,
it's consistency. Consistency is the key.
What do you think in the last 20 years, what would our listeners who are looking to put stuff down, what should they buy?
Well, the 2009, the last vintage we declared, is really quite unique.
And it's a 30-year wine?
And plus, yeah. I mean, it's a huge wine. The people making the wine, the people tasting the wine in the company have been working for us for 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. And their parents worked for the company.
And they're all saying the same.
And they're saying they've never seen a tannic and phenolic levels like we experienced in 2009. So that's a huge, monumental vintage.
Chattery, what am I drinking?
That's the Scotch and Taylor Flaggate 10.
This to me smells like a Manhattan with a root beer float on top. There's like some root beery sort of like, maybe, I don't know, cream soda, like
overtones. Scotch brought it out in the tawny? Not really.
Absolutely,
sure.
It's in the good creamy.
It doesn't taste like that at all, but but the nose on it has got some...
Ryan's just trying to get us to agree to some bizarre tasting note.
Well,
can you taste the avocado on that, Brian? It's fantastic.
It's asparagus.
It's asparagus that's been left out.
It does have the sassafras.
Yeah, a little sass. Yeah.
But it's the complement of butterscotch and scotch and caramels. It's the burnt sugar in both the scotch and the Taylor's 10-year-old, the 10-year-old scotch and the 10-year-old Taylor's.
Well, I'm getting the signal from Jack, but I do want to give our listeners one more chance to check out this cocktail list at portcocktails.com. And then, Katarina, where can our listeners drink these beautiful mixed port cocktails in the Wick or in Brooklyn? Where can we go?
In Brooklyn. Well, hopefully at Roberta's, actually, pretty soon.
In Manhattan?
We have Lantern's Keep and
BLT Steakhouse.
BLT
Steak, okay.
We're kind of everywhere. We're just peppered throughout.
Well, we want to give people a place to check it out and have a chance to enjoy these like we are.
1534, which is a great little cocktail bar in Soho.
Oh, nice. Cool. All right.
I think most bars, restaurants you go into will stock Taylor's 10-year-old. They'll stop.
And so you can ask. And so if you go in and ask for a cocktail.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So this has been great. Well, guys, I want to thank you so much for coming. And Katarina, you've done it. You know, of course, you've brought another fabulous guest. And Lorenzo,
thank you
so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us on. It's been fantastic.
Right. So this is, I think, it's been another successful show here at Roberta's. And thank you for tuning into Unfiltered. And we'll catch you next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.